There's nothing special about being American. None of you can define for me what an American is.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I'm 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I'm Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, Davy Crockett. I'm Lee.
Coming to you from the T-Tom Studios in the free state of Florida, sponsored by Maker's Mark Bourbon. This is Don't Tread on America. Your host. Ha. Let's go. Come on, Donk you. Let's go. How's everybody doing out there today? It is Tuesday, April 16, 2024. How's everybody doing out there today? Hopefully your day is going well. As I'm recording this, I'm sure there's a great portion of you guys that are probably still working. And maybe if you're getting ready to go to work, you might listen to this tonight or tomorrow on Wednesday. Either way, I hope everyone's day is going fantastic. Now, I do have an admission to make. Now, I know I beat this like a dead horse, and you guys, I know I'm speaking to the choir when I tell you this, because if you're listening to this and you're just a dude or a chick like me, not that I'm a chick, I guess I shouldn't say like that, a chick like me, if you're just a regular working American like me, let's put it that way, and you work a job and you do whatever you do. And then let's say you do a podcast. Let's say you actually try to do a podcast. And let's say you do it once or twice or three or four times a week, whatever, five times, whatever it is. And if you're not doing it on a subject that you don't have to really think about, you don't really have to do any kind of research, you're just talking about whatever, that's one thing. But when you're talking about a subject and you want to keep it fresh and you want to keep it new and you don't want to get on here and talk about the same old thing that everyone else is talking about, on top of the fact that you work a job all day, it's very hard to come up with content for a show. And I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm trying to prepare you for a shitty show. So, no. But it's about 3:30 as I'm recording this. I really would like to have recorded this earlier. But I'm telling you, when I tell you this, I was struggling to find something other than, let me watch the news and see what they're talking about, and I'll just try and put my spin on it. No, I don't want to do that. And unfortunately, we're going to have to do that. So anyway, in the news today, no. I guess what I'm going to talk about today is essentially this. I'm going to kind of be all over the road. And obviously, we're going to talk about current events as far as what's going on in Israel and Iran and all that other stuff over yonder there. And the biggest question that I've been asking myself is why? Other than what we're being told by the media, the mainstream media, other podcasts, news talk radio, whatever it is, whoever it is, I want to know why. Why is this stuff happening? Why? And we're going to get into that here today. But first, guys, please, whatever podcast app you're listening to this on, guys, I implore you and I beg you to please make sure you're following the show, you subscribe to the show, and then share this with your friends. It's very important to me. And those little things, it doesn't cost you a penny. Those little things help the show out tremendously. No matter what podcast app you're on, if it's Apple, Spotify, Google, iHeart, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're on, we're on all the platforms. So, like, for example, if you have an iPhone, you're listening to this on the iPhone podcast, on Apple podcast, and you have a friend that has an Android device of some sort, and you say, oh, yeah, listen to this guy. He's Don't Tread on Marika. He's on Apple podcast, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I've got a Samsung whatever, and I don't have Apple. Cool. He's on Spotify, Google Play. Even if you don't want to download another app, your phone automatically comes with Apple Podcast. Your phone automatically comes with Google Play. So no excuses. If you are listening to this on Apple or Spotify, guys, if you could please leave the show a rating, preferably a 5-star. And if you want to leave a review, that would be even better. And I will discuss those reviews on the air. So please, you know, those are the little things you can do that doesn't cost you a penny. Nothing more than hitting a button, hitting a 5-star. If you want to write something cool, those are the little things you can do just to help a regular dude with a full-time job and a part-time podcast. Those are the things you can help me out with for free. Now, if you want to help the show out monetarily, my P.O. box is... No, we're not doing that. I have started... Now, obviously, you guys, if you've been listening to the show for a while, we have the DTOM store, okay? Link is at the bottom of the podcast app, and once you're listening to this on, you just click on that, it'll take you right to the website. Now, what I've decided to do with the proceeds to that from that store is anything I can make over top of what it cost me to produce the products, that money will go to Tunnels and Towers. So I need you guys to help me help them as much as I can, because you know we're already doing the $11 a month, but if we can do more, then that'd be great. If you guys don't know what Tunnel to Tower is, then turn on television. No, but seriously, they're a very good organization. They seem to do a lot. I think their give back percentage is like 95 or 97%. I can't remember the exact number, but nonetheless, pretty strong number. So then there is also our outside affiliate. Our other sponsor is Reaper Apparel Company. You can check them out at ReaperApparelCo.com. Link also is at the bottom of the podcast app, so you don't have to worry about typing in the website if you don't understand what I'm saying. But use promo code DTOM. Get 10% off your order, guys. T-shirts, hats, sweatshirts. Not that you really need a sweatshirt now, but they do have tank tops and shorts and all sorts of stuff. Check them out, Reaper Apparel Co. Link is at the bottom of the podcast app once you're listening to this on, and you can help the show out. That money will go into my pocket and will make me extremely rich, and I thank you for that. Just joking. I don't suspect to make a ton of money off of that, so whatever you do buy will help fund the show and keep the show running. All right. So, have you guys asked any questions? Like, for the last, 6 months now, we've been hearing nothing but about Israel. So from December 7th to last week, it was all about Palestine and Gaza and Israel and who's the war criminal. Is it Netanyahu? Is it the Hamas? Is it both? Is it neither? And you kind of get tired of talking about it, so you're kind of like, whatever. And then this weekend, obviously, we saw what we saw with Iran, launching 300 cruise missiles and drones from various sites around the Middle East to Israel. Now, the majority of those, I think the number was 99% of those, were taken out either by the Iron Dome or by America's warships that were in the vicinity. And then, you know, you watch the news, and you get the sense of everyone's against Israel, right? That's the sense you get when you watch the news. And I always wonder, now, guys, you have to understand, I'm really thinking off the top of my head. I have nothing written down. I have some news articles here, so just bear with me. I literally have 3 titles to the show written down. I don't know which one we're going to use yet. We're going to see how the show goes, and we'll get there. Trust me. So I'm asking questions. why is everyone picking on Israel? You know, because that's what it seems like. When you watch the news or you listen to the news or you listen to other podcasts, that's what they want us to believe. That it's just little old Israel. They're just sitting there with, you know, with their Jewish population, and all these Muslim countries are just picking on them. And then I came to an epiphany yesterday because I started thinking about this, and I was like, you know, to me, it seems like, and I had no backing on this. Now, I've since found some backing to that, so just bear with me. But it seems like to me, and this is what I thought about yesterday, that Israel is kind of like the, like some people call them like a proxy for the United States to be able to start shit in the Middle East. And I'm like, okay, I understand where you're coming from with that. But even if you don't go down that road, and let's just say Israel is not a proxy, and I'm not besmirching I'm more talking about the government of Israel. So don't get me wrong when I'm talking about this. I'm not talking about the historical value of the people of Israel or what that land represents biblically. I'm more referring to the government of Israel. Okay, so let's get that straight off the bat when I talk about this. But it's almost like Israel is the... You remember the movie Christmas Story, right? Where you had Spike and the other dude, the little guy. I can't think of his fucking name. I want to say it was... I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. Little guy, wore a little jacket, a little hat, and he's a little... And but he was kind of like the tough. You know, he was kind of like the bully... Without the muscle. The muscle was Spike, if you remember. So it was always, what you going to do about it? What you going to do about it? And then Spike would step in. And you've seen this through mankind. You've seen, you may have even dealt with this as a person yourself, especially when you were a kid. When I was a kid, when we were in middle school, high school, junior high, I had a friend, oddly enough, I know, that was a little guy, you know. And he liked to start shit. And then it was up to me and a couple of the rest of us who would have to kind of cover his ass. Okay? And this happened on many occasions. And that's the feeling I get from Israel. Now, I'm not saying that Israel can't defend itself, but I'll say this about that. With what happened Saturday night, if America wasn't there, how bad would that have been for the Israeli people? And I ain't talking about the Israeli government, because in the grand scheme, who really gives a shit about them? It's the people of Israel that would have suffered. And I honestly believe they kind of do these things in the sense of they know they have America right there. Now, regardless of what we've been hearing lately, that Biden's not going to do, you know, be there for them to back them up, you know, if they retaliate again against Iran, that's, you know, that we'll see, right? But, well, Don, the Iron Dome did a lot of the, well, okay, who do you think gave the Iron Dome? I mean, that's number one. Israel has a lot of its protections because we give them roughly $3 to $4 billion a year in military aid, whether they're fighting a war or not. They get that money, which helps with training, which helps with their, you know, their vehicles, whether they're air or ground, and missiles and so on and so forth. So, but I still ask the question, why? So even if you go back 60 years, 70 years, why? Now, I did a show whenever I did it way back when about the Balfour Declaration. And that was essentially about the creation of the state of Israel, the country. Israel, the country as we know it today, was not a country 80 years ago. It was because of that Balfour Declaration that Israel became a nation. Now, we are led to believe, or we are told by mainstream media and those type of people, that the state of Israel is what it is because if you go back to World War II, you know, Hitler and the Jews and so on and so forth, and this was a land given to them to help them be Jewish people and not fear retaliation. Now, as we are told through history, obviously the area is highly Muslim, Islamic, whatever, and those two factions don't get along. So you're obviously going to have issues with a lot of the countries in the Middle East against Israel. So whoever put them there in place of... Now, as I discussed it on the show, the Balfour Declaration show is more of a situation where that gives us an end to the Middle East from an oil standpoint and so on and so forth. And is Israel's role in the area as to be an antagonizer? I don't know. Now, before I get into all of that, I'm going to cover a few more current things that are going on. And as far as like one of the titles I was thinking about with the show, I was calling it The Biden Regime is Fueling War Around the World. And where I was going to go with that was the whole situation in Ukraine. Okay. So when that February of what, 20, was it 22? February 22, I guess. Russia invaded Ukraine, whatever the story is you want to go with, whatever, whatever. And for 2+ years now, they've been at war, and I kind of equated that situation to a bad business deal. If you're an entrepreneur and you're investing in a company that makes widgets, and they constantly make widgets, and then they can't do anything else but make widgets, and then widgets go out of style, but this company knows nothing else about anything else, so all they do is make widgets, eventually you're just going to lose your money, and the country's or the company is going to go under. And that's essentially what I feel like Ukraine is. It's just a company making widgets, and no one's in the widget business. And what I mean by that is we're sinking money into a country that can't defend itself. And we know we can't really get involved, even though we kind of are. And but is it – does that money that's going to Ukraine really have anything to do with defending Ukraine? Or is it more of a money laundering scheme for the United States? And I have a clip I'm going to play here in just a second, but I want to tie that into what's going on right now in Israel. And not even right now with what happened with Iran over the weekend, but what was going on since October 7th with Gaza and the Palestinians, or Hamas, I guess I should actually say, but the Palestinians are paying the price. And since October 7th, we went from... Not only do we need to keep funding Ukraine's effort, we now need to up Israel's money also. In the meantime, we're going broke over here, but, nonetheless. So, I found this clip, and I find it interesting. So, I'm going to play this before I read on other things here, if my Twitter wants to work. Come on. Now, this is off of Fox and Friends. Now, this is Brian Kilmeade and General Jack Keane. Okay, so Brian Kilmeade, say what you want about him. Now, I used to really like Brian Kilmeade, and sometimes when I'm able to watch him, some of the things he says, I'm like, I kind of laugh at or whatever. But deep down inside, I really don't think he's what you think he is, realistically. And General Jack Keane, ex-military, obviously, he says the quiet part out loud, and if you want to know what our involvement has to do with anything else that's going on in the world, whether it's Ukraine, Israel, whatever, it has nothing to do with us. That's because, if in all honesty, if we really wanted to stop Russia, if we really wanted to get involved, we would be over there. What has ever stopped us from getting physically involved in these types of skirmishes before? Now, obviously, it's almost like, and I don't know this to be fact, and I'm not saying this because I think that the United States is a bunch of pussies. I don't want to believe that that's even kind of the case. But it's almost like, okay, back in the 90s, late 80s or into the early 90s, Iraq was doing some crazy things in the Middle East. And they invaded Kuwait. And we said, no, you're not going to do that, and we stopped it. Now, what's the difference between what Saddam did to Kuwait, if you want to believe the mainstream media story of what's going on in Ukraine, what's the difference between that and back, you know, in Iraq and Kuwait and what's going on in Ukraine? Really nothing. The difference is we went in with an objective that we could beat Saddam. We can control him. We could go in and do what we needed to do, free the people of Kuwait, give them their freedom, give them their borders back, and then control Saddam. Because we did, essentially, for a while before we went in and killed him again because of 9/11, which he had nothing to do with, but that's a show for another day. But it's almost like we don't want to physically get involved with Ukraine because we know deep down inside that Russia, Putin, whoever's in control over there won't put up with that. And it would escalate into a world war. And it's almost like Putin and China they're kind of waiting. They're just waiting. In the meantime, what we're doing in this country is, and it's weird how this clip plays. I'm going to play this, and then I'm going to talk about it on the backside, and you'll understand where I'm going with it from there.
Not well understood. The money is used to buy that back from the defense industry, and we get the most recent technology and capability back. So it's actually a plus for the Defense Department in the long run. Not well understood. We're not giving money to the Ukrainians. We're giving it to the defense industry.
Yeah, they should be saying that. We shouldn't have to spell that out every Friday. General Jack Keane, thanks so much.
So what he's saying is essentially, okay, the however many billion dollars we're giving to Ukraine or we're giving to Israel or whatever, it doesn't really go to them. It's like we're going to promise you X amount of dollars in aid, quote unquote, but that money, not all of it, but a lot of it comes back to our military contractors. So the U.S. military budget right now this year is 800, I don't know the exact number, but it's 820 something billion dollars. Okay. Now that's just our budget to fund the military as it stands. This has nothing to do with going to war, nothing like that. It's just the everyday operations of our military. Okay. So if our military spending budget's 800 plus billion dollars, and then we're giving however many billions of dollars to Ukraine or Israel for whatever reason, as far as war is concerned, but that money is actually tanks or guns or munitions or planes or, you know, whatever the case may be, or missiles. We're not giving them money to go buy those stuff. We're kind of giving the money to ourselves. So it's almost like giving yourself a loan. Let's say you borrow, because we don't have the money. You borrow, you know, you borrow to buy a car. All right, you're paying interest on that. But then you buy the car, you own the car lot, and you buy the car from yourself, but you still charge yourself the interest. It's, you know, it's kind of like that. You're helping your business out, but you're not really helping yourself out because now you still have the debt. And you understand what I'm saying? It's that confusing. So essentially what they're saying is we don't give a shit about the American people. They're not helping you or me out. They're helping the military industrial complex out, which, by the way, already has an $800 billion budget. Now, that doesn't necessarily go to Boeing or Lockheed Martin or whoever else that contracts and builds equipment for the military, because you shouldn't have to constantly be building stuff if we're not at war getting stuff destroyed, right? So these companies need business. So back in the, you know, like back during Vietnam, there's no better business than war. And that's kind of how we got out of the Great Depression back in the 30s. I mean, those are the things that have helped this country. By some way or another, we spend money to get out of debt that puts us in debt, that gets us out of debt. That you understand? I mean, you literally can go cross-eyed trying to figure out the commonality of what the fuck they're talking about. And it's not even just Biden. We're not even just talking about Biden. Biden just happens to be the one in the batter's box right now. You know, it's all of them. The only difference is, and I really don't try to want to get on here and make this all about Trump and Trump's great and Trump this and Trump that. But in my life, Trump was the only one that didn't have a conflict for the most part where we're having these discussions about constant military spending. Yes, every year there's a military budget. And yes, every year it's $3 billion budget. But it's for the quote-unquote protection of our country. These numbers that we're talking about have nothing to do with us. It's about funding and giving money to the military-industrial complex to send shit over to wherever. And the funny thing about that is we're not even – it's not even like, okay, they're taking $10 billion and giving it to Lockheed Martin to, you know, build some planes for Ukraine. It's not even that. It's that we're giving them our old shit, okay? You can have our old F-14s or our old guns or our old ammo that we had sitting around or our old tanks that we had sitting around. Or we'll tell Poland, give them something, and we'll give you some of our newer than what you have, but some of our old stuff, but it's still better than what you got. And then that's where he said, we get better stuff because we're giving them our old shit and then buying us new stuff. It's kind of like if you ever had a child and you had a car and little Susie turned 16, so you're going to give her your old car and go buy you a new car. You ain't buying Susie a new car because that's fucked up. I'm driving an 08 LeBaron here and she's driving a 2024, you know, whatever. You're going to go buy the 2024 and give her the 08. You understand what I'm saying? And that's kind of what we do. That's where the money comes or goes to and how we increase our military prowess. So it's weird. You know, why wouldn't you, versus giving equipment to another country, whoever that country is, and you want to have newer stuff for yourself, why wouldn't you maybe sell the older stuff? Why don't you eBay some F-14s to Ukraine or whoever? And then you can build you some F-35s or, you know, so on and so forth. We don't do that. We constantly fund ourselves. And that's why inflation is the way it is and our deficit is the way it is, because we're spending money on ourselves and then giving all our old shit away without making any money off of it. That's essentially what we are. But the kicker of this all, and this is where it all kind of comes together, is you remember on Friday, and I don't think I talked about this on Saturday, but if you watch the news or whatever, on Friday, Trump, Biden was, you know, going away for the weekend, and he had made mention, and I don't know the exact words he said, but essentially that Iran striking Israel was closer than they realized. And by all accounts, a lot of people were saying this was going to happen within a couple of days. Now, this was on Friday, or it was either Thursday or Friday, but nonetheless. And then, I'll be damned, they struck him on Saturday. And people were like, well, how the fuck did Biden know that? I mean, how? Because he's never one to be kind of precise on a date. How did he know that? Well, come to find out that Iran informed Turkey in advance of its operation against Israel. So, Iran informed Turkey in advance of its planned operation against Israel. A Turkish diplomatic source told Reuters on Sunday, adding that Washington had conveyed to Tehran via Ankara that any action it took had to be within certain limits. So, in other words, this is how it broke down. Iran said to Turkey, hey, look, just letting y'all know, because, you know, they're in the vicinity, we're about to bomb the shit out of Israel. So, you know, don't tell anybody, but maybe let people know. But, you know, and I'm not saying that Turkey maybe told Israel, I don't know. But Turkey told America, they told Washington. And then, according to this, Washington told Tehran, which is the capital in Iran, whatever, that place over yonder. Look, kind of almost like the Putin situation with Ukraine. You know, keep it within a certain limit. You know, we'll, you know, okay. And by us knowing, we were able to put on a nice show. Yeah, 300 missiles and drones, and we got most of them, 99%. So you had a couple to get through. There wasn't really much damage. I was in remote areas. So what would be the purpose? What would be the purpose of that? Now, of course, since then, it's all been talk about Israel retaliating against Iran, and we're not going to get involved, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. And I got something on that. Before I get to that, I have this article too. This is from last year. This is from December of last year. And this goes in line with the whole article I just read. Iran Navy receives new cruise missiles amid growing regional tension. So you figure December 7th, they were in a skirmish with Hamas in Gaza. And 2 months after, they received new cruise missiles from someone. I don't know who. I don't know if it says in this article. But they did nonetheless. I'm just trying to scan through this, see if I see it. But point being is, for the last couple of months, so we're what, in April? So you're talking for the last 4 or 5 months, America has known that Iran was building up its arsenal for something. And then a few days before, we knew that they were actually going to do it. I don't know that they knew a precise day, but I think the idea was letting y'all know you can be prepared, you can get Israel prepared, and we can put on a good show. But, you know, since Saturday, or during Saturday into Sunday and Monday, all you heard was about Israel possibly retaliating. They have to retaliate. They have to show a strength. They have to show force. They have to do this and they have to do that. And it goes back to my theory of Israel being the guy, the little bully guy, that pushes and pushes and pushes, and with the hope that, you know, America is standing there, got its back. Now America's saying, we're not going to get involved. Of course, we will, maybe not physically, but financially, because we've been doing that. But is it a situation where I kind of agree that I agree that we shouldn't get involved. I don't think we should get involved with Iran or with Israel, with Ukraine, with none of them. It's not our problem. Okay? And even to the point of financial situations, I don't think we should get involved. Because unless we are telling these countries to do this stuff, then it's not our problem. And the reason I say that is this, because if you know your history just a little bit, and if you want to believe the story of World War II and how we were involved in it, or how we got pulled into it, the one of the reasons that is because even though we weren't physically involved in World War II, we were financially involved in World War II by giving the British and French and so on, you know, munitions and tanks and so on and so forth. And as the story goes, Japan bombed us because we were being involved that way. And they're kind of like, if you want to get in the fight, get in the fight. Now, I also did a show on this about us knowing that this was going to happen and so on and so forth. I'm not going to go through that whole thing. You can go back and listen to that show. But when it comes to this, the reason I'm saying we shouldn't get involved is because we never know in history. You have World War One, World War Two. Okay. When World War One started and was going on, it wasn't called World War One. I think it was actually called the Great War or something like that. When World War Two started, it wasn't called World War Two, it was just a war in Europe. History made those determinations as to wars. Because ideally, Korea, Vietnam, those types of things could have been labeled World War III, World War IV, whatever. But they were called police conflicts or area con, whatever you want to call them. So, but ideally, if you just look at one and two, and you look at the main characters involved. So, like in World War II, you had, and I think it was the same World War One, but you had Germany, Japan, and Italy were your main ally, or not allies, but the Axis, right? And your allies were America, France, Britain, and then Russia was involved on our side too, mainly because of they were being attacked by Germany. It was kind of like the enemy of your enemy is your friend type thing. But in this situation, and I've talked about this on the show even before all of this started, that Iran could very well be in a new axis of evil with Russia and China, and then whoever else wants to join. So who are those players? Okay, well, Russia is arming Iran with warplanes and air defense systems. The Washington Report reports that ties between Russia and Iran have included a pledge by Moscow to provide the Iranians with advanced fighter jets and air defense technology that could help Tehran harden its defense against any future airstrikes by Israel or the United States. So there's that. Then you have North Korea butting his head. Not that I'm necessarily worried a whole lot as far as we are concerned with North Korea, but as far as if we want to worry about our allies, like we seem to want to worry about, they have officially confirmed that North Korea will support the Iranians if the U.S. tries Iran. Now, what does that mean for South Korea or Japan or, you know, any country in that vicinity? And that's where you start having your world conflict. And all of this has essentially, because I was like, through my life, you hear tidbits about Israel and Iran, but there wasn't a war. You can't open a history book and say, oh, I remember the Israeli-Iran war back in, 1985. That was crazy. You don't read that. That doesn't exist. So, if you look at just recently, we can say Iran, or, I shouldn't say we can say, but you're told that Iran just decided to shoot 300 missiles and shit to Israel for no reason. Well, the reason was because Israel bombed an embassy in Syria that was an Iranian embassy. Okay, Don, but what's the big deal? That was in Damascus. That was in Syria. That has nothing to do with Iran. It was Iranian. It was an Iranian embassy. Okay, what's your point? My point is, when Trump was president and Iran bombed the American embassy in Baghdad, or I think it was in Baghdad, I don't know if it was in Iraq, what happened? Well, we took out Soleimani because of it. Because in any country, and even in America, if you go to another country's embassy, so if you're in New York, for example, and you go to the Russian or the Chinese, or yeah, those exist. Name them. There's a ton of different countries' embassies in New York and in Washington, D.C. I think there's some on the West Coast, too, in San Fran. If you go to these countries' embassies in our country, well, most people don't know this, but that plot of land is not American soil. It is that country's soil. It is. Somehow or another, it's got to be through treaties and whatnot, I'm sure, because it goes the same way over there. If you go to any country in Europe that has a U.S. embassy, any country in the Middle East, any country in the Far East that has a U.S. embassy in it, and that is U.S. property. Okay, now, people in those countries don't see it like that, and I understand what you're saying, but it is what it is. So when you had that situation in, I think it was 2018, well, the retaliation was taking out Soleimani. So the argument is made that because Israel took out the embassy in Damascus in Syria, this was Iran's retaliation. That's why Iran has said, look, we did what we did. We're even, Steven. That's essentially the way they look at it. But you have to ask the question, what's the problem? Like, okay, I can kind of understand the issue between Israel and the Palestinians and Gaza and that whole thing. And although I believe Hamas is an arm of Iran, and not so much that they're Iranian per se, but they are funded, just like Hezbollah is. But it's almost like they're just, they're like a well-structured BLM or a well-structured Antifa. Let's just bring them back to America. But it's a lot more violent and deadly in the sense that they use rockets and guns and stuff like that. But it's basically the same thing in the sense that they're being funded by someone because Iran feels some sort of way about Israel, and Israel feels some sort of way about Iran because there's just a history there. So it's like I'm searching. So finally I come across this article. Okay, now I say finally come across this article like I had to go back hundreds of years to find this. Oddly enough, the article's from today. I guess you just have to know what you're searching for. You got to find the right keywords for the article to pop up because it's not, it's from the Washington Post, but it was put out by Stars and Stripes. So Iran and Israel's shadow war has lasted years. So yeah, I'm going to cliff note this real quick. Iran sent more than 300 missiles and drones towards Israel April 13th, making the first direct military attack on the Jewish state. That's right. The first time Iran has ever attacked Israel. First time, okay? But Israel and Iran have waged a shadow war for decades through cyber attacks, targeting, target killings, and proxy groups. Successive Iranian regimes have vowed to destroy Israel. And that's where all this comes from. We have been raised, and, you know, I'm 50 years old, and I remember hearing, it seems like forever, death to Israel, death to Israel, death to America, right? From these people, the Ayatollah Khomeini, and that, I mean, you're talking back 40-something years ago. It's like that was 5 years ago. So, like, in my mind, in most of y'all's minds, you probably have an idea to think that this has been going on for 40, 50 years. And there's really, it's really not what you think it is. It's because of the media. I'm going to tell you straight up. It's because politicians will say one thing, the media tells you another, and then there's actually nothing going on other than these small little things, these cyber attacks, targeted killings, those types of situations. When, oddly enough, Israel is the main aggressor in all of this. And I'm not trying to pick on Israel like I'm anti-Israel and I'm an anti-Semite and all that bullshit. I'm just telling you the facts of the matter. So Israel and its Western allies, including the United States, view Tehran as a threat, particularly as it gets closer to nuclear weapons capabilities. The United States has provided Israel with more military aid than any other country since World War II, now accounting for about $3 billion a year to protect it from Iran and whoever else, evidently. Here are the key moments in the Israeli-Iranian relations of the shadow war leading up to the attack. The Islamic Republic of Iran forms. So in 1979, the Islamic Republic of Iran, there was a revolution where clerical leaders seized power in 79, has worked to cultivate proxy groups across the Middle East to broaden its reach and serve as a counterweight towards Israel and the main Western backer, the United States, which Iran has called Little Satan or Great Satan, respectively. Tehran provides support to Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, Hamas in the Palestinian territories, and factions in Syria and Iraq. Wherever Israel looks right now, it seems Iran is on its border, even though Iran does not border Israel. And Hezbollah first emerged in Lebanon in the 1980s, during the Lebanese Civil War, in reaction to Israel's occupation of the country's southern region. In its 1985 manifesto, Hezbollah laid out the destruction of Israel as a key goal. Hamas was first formed in the 1980s, but rose to power in Gaza in 2007 after it defeated an established Fatah party in parliamentary elections and waged a bloody battle for the territory. Israel and many Western allies consider Hamas a terrorist group. In 2007, 2 years after withdrawing from Gaza, Israel imposed a blockade on the Gaza Strip with Egypt's support. That blockade has never been entirely lifted, which, by the way, is part of the issue as to why what happened October 7th, they were literally starving these people. I mean, it is what it is. Washington says Iran provides extensive support to Hamas and other militant groups committed to armed resistance against Israel. Palestinian Islamic Jihad in the form of financing, weapons, and training. The Iran-backed Houthi militants in Yemen, who took control of Yemen's capital in 2014 and triggered a humanitarian crisis, have been fighting against Saudi-backed government forces in what they call an act of solidarity with the Palestinians amid the war in Gaza. The militants have increased attacks on cargo ships traversing the Red Sea since October 7th, disrupting... I hope I'm not boring you guys like I'm boring myself, disrupting maritime trade and drawing global ire. Now, in fairness, it's 4 o'clock, and I've been up since 12:30 this morning. So. Iran bombs Jewish centers in Argentina, court finds. So Argentina's highest criminal court last week, now I say last week, this is recent, but this was a bombing that happened 30 years ago. And Hezbollah executed the 1994 bomb of a Jewish community center and headquarters that killed 85 people and injured more than 300. The Associated Press reported that this was one of the events that made it clear that Iran and its proxies were prepared to attack Israeli and Jewish communities anywhere in the world. For decades, people have accused Argentina, of bungling the investigation. Both Iran and Hezbollah have denied involvement in the attack on the Asociación Mutual, blah, 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 of Argentina. But Argentina's judiciary long maintained that Iran was behind the attack. So before I read on, not excusing what Iran and their proxies may or may not have done in Argentina. This was a Jewish community center. Seems like not for nothing, but it seems like an awful long way to go to try and kill some Jewish people if you're Iranian or Hezbollah or whoever it was. There's a lot closer places to go. You can cross the ocean to get to them. And number two, this wasn't a thing. Fucking an embassy. It was, you know, I'm not discounting it, but it was a community center. Whatever. You would kind of think that if Iran and or Hezbollah was involved, they would say, yeah, we did it, because it would show strength and show, look what we can do. And they're denying that it ever happened. Whatever. But that was that. Now, in the last two decades, Iran has accused Israel of tampering with its nuclear program. In 2010, cyber analysts discovered a computer virus named Stuxnet that had successfully infiltrated Iran's nuclear program among other systems. It later emerged that cyber attacks was the work of U.S. and Israeli experts, and that even after software security companies discovered the virus, the joint operation targeted Iranian nuclear infrastructure proceeded under the secret orders of President Obama, who was eager to slow Iran's apparent progress towards building an atomic bomb without launching a traditional military attack. Iran's highly sensitive nuclear facility has been hit over the years. In 2020, for example, a mass explosion fire caused significant damage. Iranian officials suggested the United States or Israel operatives were to blame. Neither country acknowledged involvement. In 21, Iran blamed Israel for electrical blackout that left older centrifuges damaged. Israeli media outlets reported at the time that the facility had been targeted by a cyber attack carried out by Mossad. There have also been several suspicious deaths of scientists between 2010 and 2012. Four scientists affiliated with the Iran's nuclear program were killed in separate incidents. In one, a physics professor at Tehran University was killed when a bomb planted on a motorcycle exploded as he passed by. More Iranian scientists have been killed since. And in many cases, authorities and Iranian media said Israel was responsible. Israel did not comment. On November 27th of 2020, a top Iranian scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, whatever, dude, was killed in an ambush outside Tehran. Iranian officials again suggested Israel was behind the attack. Ali Ansari, professor of Iranian history at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, said that while the killings did not fundamentally alter Iran and Israel's conflictual relationship, the thought that Israel was able to find and execute targeted strikes against people with sensitive knowledge of Iran's closely guarded nuclear program made the Iranians panic and create higher levels of anxiety within the Iranian establishment and desire to restore a degree of deterrence. In January of 18, years after Iran signed a deal with the United States and others to stop developing nuclear weapons in exchange for lifting economic sanctions, Israel's secret agents raided a storage facility in Tehran and stole tens of thousands of documents relating to Iran's nuclear program. Israel officials used the uncovered information to further their campaign against the 2015 nuclear accord, which Israel views as a threat to its security because it believes the deal was not stringent enough to prevent Iran from one day developing a nuclear weapon. The stolen documents contain no proof that Iran had violated the nuclear accord, the Post reported at the time. So, you had something signed in 2018 under Trump, and by all accounts, it seemed like Iran was sticking to their part of the deal. Israel broke in. So if you look at the most recent history, killing of scientists and so on and so forth, cyber attacks, was all implemented by Israel's Mossad. So I think you get to a sense where after so much bullshit, you as a person can only take so much bullshit before you strike back. Now, I think some of that striking back probably was Iran's way of paying the Hamas and Hezbollah and whatever to kind of do its dirty work, so to speak, without seeming like they were totally involved. Or maybe not. Maybe it just appears that way. I don't know. The fact of the matter is that a lot of the recent history between the two countries was started by and continually done by Israel, with maybe some help from the United States. So I was curious. Okay, we're so worried about Iran having nuclear weapons. Okay, I agree. I agree that eventually one of these countries, whether it's Iran or North Korea or someone like that, is going to figure it out. Even if they have the nuclear capabilities, they might not have the ability to launch an attack against us. But we're so worried about everyone else, we have to worry that even though North Korea might not be able to build a ballistic missile, it's going to get to America, it can get to Japan. Although Iran might not be able to build a missile to get to America, it can get to Israel or Britain or somewhere in Europe. And that's where our problem lies. But the kicker to it all is like, this was my question. Once again, a question with no answer, because oddly enough, it's probably one of the biggest kept secrets that you can even ask. Does Israel have nuclear capability? Well, by all accounts, yes, but we don't know. I mean, you and I don't know. Let me put it that way. I'm sure the U.S. knows. But it could be 5 missiles. It could be 200 missiles. It could be, you know, whatever. And if we're so worried that a country like Iran, if they were to get nuclear capabilities and have the launching capability of sending a rocket to wherever, why wouldn't we worry that Israel would do the same thing? Once again, I'm not necessarily worried about us per se, but it's everything else. And that's where I come across this. And I really didn't think I was going to talk this long, but hey, hi, I'm Don. But I stumbled up in my searches. I stumbled upon this. And it's called the Begin Doctrine, which is the crux of this show. All of this is leading up to this. And I've never in my life ever heard of the Begin Doctrine. So we're going to go a little longer than an hour today, guys. So bear with me. So what is the Begin Doctrine? Why is it called the Begin Doctrine? And who does it help or hurt? Okay. Now, in my search for does Israel have nuclear weapons, I stumbled upon this. The Begin Doctrine is a common term for the Israeli government's preventative strike counter-proliferation policy regarding their potential enemies' capability to possess weapons of mass destruction, particularly nuclear weapons. The roots of this doctrine can be tracked at least to Operation Democles, and that was a covert campaign of the Israeli intelligence agency Mossad in 1962, which targeted German scientists and technicians formerly employed in Nazi Germany's rocket program, who were developing rockets for Egypt at a military site known as the Factory 333. And according to Otto Jakic, an Austrian scientist involved with the project, the rockets began being developed were programmed to use radioactive waste. So, where am I at? Secret and diplomatic operations against the Iraqi nuclear program were started by the Yitzhak Rabin government in the mid-70s. The doctrine itself was initiated by Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin in June of 81, following Israel's attack on Iraq's nuclear reactor, Osirek, in Operations Opera. The doctrine remains a feature of Israeli security planning. So, in essence, we talk about, I mean, we kind of do the same thing. Like, look what we do with North Korea. But this doctrine essentially is the reason a lot of everything you see happening is happening. So, and I've said this before, America has God knows how many nuclears. Russia has however many. China has however many. France, Britain. I mean, it's not like America is the only country that has these weapons. By all accounts, Israel has these weapons. So what makes any one of these countries more important than the other that they can possess them, but the other countries can? What makes Israel so important that they can have upwards of 200 nuclear weapons, but no one else in the region can? And it's simple. Same reason we want to have them and no one else can have them. It's because of dominance. You want to be able to control the area in which you are at. So essentially, the Begin Doctrine was a way for Israel to justify its being of being the nuclear power in the Middle East. And these weapons of mass destructions, and really it's more about nuclear capabilities. Now, as I recall, back in 2010, 12, 13, you know, around that area, a lot of Iran's purpose for nuclear development, whether it's true or not, was based around nuclear energy, like a power plant. And being naive and not being one that had done a lot of research on it like I do now, I was kind of like, well, that's bullshit. They're lying. They're just doing this to get nuclear power because they want to bomb America. And in essence, even if that was the case, let's say it wasn't about nuclear energy to have power plants or whatever, I don't think it really had anything to do with us per se as much as it had to do with Israel. Like, well, if they can have nuclear weapons, why can't we? Well, because we have the begin doctrine, and anytime you try to do anything, we're just going there and steal the technology. So I think in essence, what could very well end up happening is this. The United States of America, most of Europe, Russia, China, we are kind of like the popular kids in school, okay? Now, over in the playground there, there's a couple little rugrats. They're always fighting over stupid shit. That's Israel and whoever else. Now, in the meantime, over the course of time, Israel's become friends with most of the countries in Europe and America, whereas Iran, just because they're opposite of Israel, has become friends with the other side. Which these two countries that really, in all essence, mean nothing to us. I mean, realistically, if you're listening to the show and you happen to be from Israel, you have family that lives there. Once again, this has nothing to do with the people of any of these countries, okay? I'm talking about the governments. I'm talking about the governments of all these countries, including our own. Because we're just here. We're just players. We have no control over what's going on. We don't. We can vote and we can do whatever, but ultimately, we have no control because you don't know if the Republican that you're voting for is any different than the Democrat that someone else is voting for. We're just here. All you can do is worry about yourself, essentially. It's what it boils down to. I can do the show 8 days a week. In the grand scheme of things, I can tell you to do whatever, collect shit and buy this and get guns and get ammo and buy food and do all the shit. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. You need to worry about yourself. But the actions of these other countries are going to get us into a war. We never think it's going to be possible. And you always hear World War III. And I'm not going to sit here and say that. But we aren't going to start anything, but it's going to get to a point that if what I'm reading is correct, and Russia is going to start arming Ukraine, if Russia is going to start arming Iran, we're already arming Israel, and we've been doing it, then you're going to have Russian military vehicles versus American military vehicles, Russian technology versus American technology. When does it eventually spill over? Now, the things that piss me off about this particular administration is even back, if you go back to Ukraine, shortly after Russia invaded Ukraine with the hopes of taking over all of Europe, which was a bullshit lie. I'm sorry, but it's a lie. I've told you many a times the whole purpose of that and what it was. Now, once Putin was able to do what he set out to do, and that was to help the people in the Donbass region and secure that corner of land leading to Crimea, that was a twofold reason. The reasons was the people in that area were being invaded by their own country in the Azov Battalion and the Ukrainian government. And for what? Well, they refused to speak Ukrainian because they felt that they are Russian. They wanted out of, so on and so forth. I've done shows on it. I'm not going to talk about it again. After that happened, shortly after all that went down, I want to say, so that was February of 22. I want to say before the summer of 22, there was talks, and I want to say that Boris Johnson from England went over there, talked to Putin, and Putin had said, look, I'm willing to come to the negotiation table and talk about a ceasefire and a peace settlement. And from all accounts, so was Zelensky. because at one point, Zelensky actually seemed to care about his people. But then the Biden, I don't want to say Biden himself, but the Biden regime got into Zelensky's ear and said, no, you don't want to give up that easily. Come on, look what he's doing. And they talked all this bullshit and got him all hyped up. And here we are 2+ years later. But there could have been peace 2 years ago in that area. There was, for the most part, peace in the Middle East when Trump signed the, had, you know, with all those countries over there, and they signed the Abraham Peace Accords. And they signed a deal with Iran to stop doing whatever you're doing, and we'll lift some of the sanctions, but you got to promise to do this or we're going to cut you back off. And they were doing it. By all accounts, even when Mossad went in there and stole the documents, by all accounts, they were sticking to their word. But it was the fact that Israel didn't like the fact that maybe they had something and they were going to maybe do something, maybe. So, like I said, we as human beings, not as Americans, not as Israelis or Iranians or Russians or Ukrainians or whatever Ians you are, we as human beings born on this earth, you can only take so much bullshit before it's finally enough. And we in this country, and you're listening to the show, and I say it a lot, we're tired of our government and the things that they're doing to us. We don't have a clue. We, in all essence, even though we have a dipshit for a president and we can see what our lawmakers are doing to this country, we really don't have it that bad in grand scheme of things. But it's eventually going to get worse. And the small amount of us that are bitching now will be the ones that in 5-10 years will be like, told you. Will Trump be our savior? I don't know. I really don't know. I want to believe that that's the case. Could Kennedy be our savior? Once again, don't know. In all honesty, I think Kennedy is such an outsider and so hated by the machine that even if he were to win, which I don't think that's even going to be a possibility, I fear for his life in that situation. In all honesty, because I think he's so anti-establishment, even more so than Trump, that it wouldn't be pretty. I mean, really. I really and honestly believe that. I'm not saying they would take him in a convertible limousine through downtown Dallas, but I think it would be a situation where something bad could happen. I think in a roundabout way, Trump talks a big game. He talked a big game before he won in 16, and then really didn't do anything that he said he was going to do as far as lock her up and all that stuff. Now, as things have come lately with the way the Biden administration and the machine is treating him, maybe things will be different. That's the part of me that kind of wants him to win, to just see. I'm ready for it because in the meantime, we've got to fix. If Trump wins, this is what needs to happen. First of all, he needs to fix all this bullshit overseas. First of all, he needs to turn the gas switch back on. I think that'll help a little bit with our problems. Then he needs to go back into the Middle East and fix shit over there before it gets too out of control. Fortunately, we're not 2 years ago. We have that going for us. But if the adults in the room don't step up and start squashing some of this madness, when I tell you there's a very large possibility that within the next year we could see a world conflict. Russia's army is already 15% bigger than it was before the Ukrainian situation. Why are they building up their military? In the meantime, our military is shrinking to the point where they've actually sent out letters to retired personnel asking them to reenlist if they are physically able to. No matter what, I mean, I shouldn't say no matter what your age is, but if you're within a relative age, that's how desperate we are. Things ain't looking so good. I will say that is for sure. And that's what scares me. And that's what constantly makes me wonder. You know, my wife, we were having a conversation. You don't really go to the gun range much. Well, I don't really need to go to the gun range much. I mean, as a way to kind of release tension and whatever. But at this rate, I don't want to waste the ammo. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, guys, all I can do is tell you is be careful, be cautious, and do your own research. Don't believe everything that you see on TV, on the news, and on some of your mainstream podcasts, because they're not going to go into this kind of depth. They're not going to talk about the Begin Doctrine and the real reason Israel is the way they are. A lot of these places are going to just tell you that Israel deserves to strike back and go after Iran. And this is what it. I'm telling you right now, it's been tit for tat. The way Iran's looking at it is they're kind of even. Now, what happens if Israel strikes back, which I can't imagine they're not going to? It's just a matter of time. The question is, what do they strike back with? How do they strike back? And who gets involved after that? So, with that being said, guys, please make sure you follow us on social media at Don't Tread on America on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, and the Ticker Talker. And we are also on the Twitter X machine at dtom_1775. Don't forget about our website, donttreadonamerica.com. And you can email me directly, donq@donttreadonamerica.com. Guys, and then make sure, please, you visit our sponsors, the DTOM Store and Reaper Apparel Company. The links are on the bottom of the podcast app in which you're listening to this on. And please, also, guys, make sure you are following the show and subscribe. And if you're on Apple or Spotify, if you give me 5-star, that'd be great. And please make sure you share this with your friends. Other than that, guys, you have a fantastic rest of your day. And I'll talk to you again on Thursday. Peace.